This interview is part of a thought leadership study created by KPMG in collaboration with FT Longitude.
COVID was a big test of the supply chain, and those companies that had short, robust, reliable supply chains kind of made it through COVID. Those companies that had long, complex supply chains all around the world had a lot more difficulties, you know, bringing product in, meeting their needs.
Today's global trade flows and supply chains are increasingly fragmented. Companies need to be flexible and fleet-footed if they're to withstand unpredictable shocks. Supply chain resilience is already proving to be a rate-determining factor. It's forcing leaders to carefully consider the balance and trade-offs between cost, risk, and agility. I'm Sean Kearns, Director of Strategy at FT Longitude, and in this series, we consider the how and why of strategic shoring and the critical factors that will determine its long-term success. Today, we take a close-up look at how to create agile supply chains. Joining me is Martin Van Trees, supply chain expert and President Emeritus for Zafika. Martin, thanks for joining me. Martin, I'd like to begin with a big picture question. What role has the global macro environment played over the last few years in how leaders approach their supply chain strategies and what this means for delivering products reliably to the US?
I think you have to go back to the beginning, you know, 40 plus years ago, when pharmaceutical companies had a very small, short, and very resilient supply chain, where actually, in a lot of cases, they delivered the drugs themselves to the pharmacies who dispensed them. And there were no middlemen in the process. And so as you look at the evolution of the supply chain in pharma, you have to look at there's not just one pharmaceutical industry, there's two. There's the generic industry, and there's the brand industry. And over time, for different reasons, those industries globalized. So the generic drug industry globalized because they were chasing low cost, so they could deliver critical medicine to patients at the lowest possible cost. And the branded companies that had patents on their products, they were chasing tax advantages. So they weren't chasing cost. They were looking for places to manufacture the product that provide significant tax advantages so they could give a greater return to their shareholders. So you had one industry, two different tracks, depending on their operations and what they focused on. And over 20 years, the pharmaceutical industry went from a very local, country-specific kind of business to a global behemoth and taking different routes to globalization over many, many years. And over those years, ignored some of the geopolitical aspects of what were going on in the environment, ignoring how hard it was to make pharmaceuticals and how many years it takes to get a facility up and running and making sure you meet all the expectations of the regulators, but also protecting patients. So all of those complexities are colliding at the same time. And that's where we are today. And based on a lot of things that are going on in the environment, we're seeing a nearshoring effect or a strategic shoring effect or even an onshoring effect. So I think there's a lot of things going on in the supply chain. There's no one aspect that is causing everything to move around again, but clearly over many years, it was caused by generics chasing low cost, branded pharmaceuticals looking for tax advantage.
Supply chains are built on a number of variables that are susceptible to shifts or disruption. We've been referring to them in this research study as fragile assumptions. And many executives fall into the trap of assuming that just because a certain factor or agreement stands today, it will continue to stand tomorrow. Recent past tells us this isn't always the case. So Martin, what considerations do leaders need to make to ensure their supply chains are agile rather than fragile?
So I think one of the key levers that can be pulled in the pharmaceutical supply chain is inventory. Right? If you keep strategic inventory of your raw materials, intermediates, and finished product, any disruption in the supply chain, you have the ability to absorb it because you have a set amount of inventory in strategic places throughout your manufacturing process. So that's probably the biggest lever that can be pulled is having sufficient inventories to absorb those shocks. And then the second thing, which is a little more expensive, is redundancy. Have the ability to manufacture a product in multiple locations. So if one location has an issue, you know, a labor shortage, labor stoppage, a plant catches on fire, you know, an earthquake, a volcano erupts, a tsunami comes. All of these things I've experienced in my career. You tell people about this and they look at you like you're crazy. I said, no, these are all things that have happened. A volcano erupts in Iceland. It disrupts all air travel between the United States and Europe. Earthquake happens in Japan and a tsunami comes and disrupts all the movement of raw materials and product in and out of that region. And these things are real. And so having geographical redundancy is another shock absorber that we can use. It's a little more expensive, but it is a good shock absorber. So those are two big levers that can be pulled that have a significant impact.
Martin, it would be great to go deeper into the points you've just raised there, in particular the role of supply chain agility during the pandemic, which places a huge strain on pharmaceutical supply chains and inventory. Did strategic shoring or nearshoring play a role in how Civica responded during the pandemic?
My family and I were in Hawaii on vacation, and the whole world shut down on Friday, March 13th, 2020, right? That's when COVID said, enough is enough, all air travel, everything's going to get shut down. And so I was here in Hawaii as things were progressing, you could see what was happening. And so I was requested to go to Washington, D.C. on the 12th. Of March. So I left my family in Hawaii and I left one day before everything shut down and went to Washington to kind of help strategize with the government how best to handle these things. And, you know, the U.S. government has a strategic national stockpile that they weren't paying attention to. Right? Over time, you know, naturally things happen. I've had this thing for 20 years. No one's ever used it. My focus goes elsewhere. And so the Strategic National Stockpile, when they went to look, many of the things that they had in the stockpile were non-functional, like a medical device or a glove or a respirator were non-functional, or they had expired in the case of drugs. So there was a big push to really try to get to all of the manufacturers and say, what could you do to help us through this period of time? And during that time at Civica, we provided 11 different medications to treat patients in hospital and to support patients in the hospital who had COVID. Not to treat the COVID, but to support the patients. For example, you know, neuromuscular blocking agents so that they could put a respirator in and intubate them. You know, pain agents so that you're comfortable when you're being intubated. And those kind of things that would support someone in the hospital. Antibiotics. And so of those 11 medications, we saw increases in demand in sometimes 400%. And that's a pretty big shock to your supply chain. Overnight, see a 400% spike. And, you know, it's really, we're proud to say that every patient got the medication they needed from Civica, even when we saw 400% spikes, because of the way we managed our inventory and that we had those buffers in the inventory. And we're a member-driven organization, and our members were really honest with us where they had demand. You know, the demand's in New York in this hospital. Don't worry about the person in Chicago because we don't see this big spike. So we're able to work with our members and our inventories to make sure we were able to get through that crisis. But when I was in Washington, you know, they're saying, what can we do for the national stockpile? And we went back and looked at our inventories and we said, look, whatever we provide to the stockpile is going to benefit our members at the same time, right? So human nature says there's a shortage. I got to buy as much as I need and then I'll help everybody else. Or we had built such trust with our members that they didn't do that hoarding, that they really trusted us to make sure that with our inventory and how we managed it across the country, that it would always be there for the treat the patients that they had to treat.
What are some of the biggest lessons you took from that time when it comes to supply chain strategy?
COVID was a big test of the supply chain. And those companies that had short, robust, reliable supply chains kind of made it through COVID. those companies that had long, complex supply chains all around the world had a lot more difficulties, you know, bringing product in, meeting their needs. Now, I will say that during COVID, between the legislatures, the regulators, policymakers, manufacturers, suppliers, and customers, everyone did heroic efforts, absolute heroic efforts to make sure patients had what they needed. But that was luck. that was roll up your sleeves, hard work and luck that made that happen. That was not a system that made that happen. And in the grand scheme of things, COVID was kind of a small pandemic. There's something bigger coming down the road. It's not if, it's when it's going to happen. And it's going to be bigger. And I don't know if luck and hard work will get us through the next one. And so it's the importance is trying to figure out, how do I adjust my supply chains so that there is more resiliency in the supply? Do I need more inventory? Go away from just-in-time. Do I need to get rid of the number of partners I have to make a product, right? And go back to having just smaller supply chains with fewer links in it. So even today, United States Congress is working on the BioSecure Act. And the BioSecure Act is trying to force people to rethink about their supply chains and don't be so dependent on China from a geopolitical standpoint. And we're already seeing that investors are telling the people they invest in, stop, do not have so much a reliability on China for your supply chain. If you do, I'm not going to put my money into your company. So you're even seeing it in the startup companies where investors are saying enough is enough. We want a shorter, more robust supply chain.
And finally, Martin, as you think about where all of this is headed, do you think we'll see more companies localizing their supply chains towards the Americas in the near future? Will companies continue to nearshore and onshore towards the US?
Yeah, I think the trend we see right now about localizing the supply chain, nearshoring, onshoring, strategic shoring, I think that's going to take place. It's going to happen. But I think the pendulum's going to snap back, right? It's just a human kind of thing. Pendulum moves both ways. So I think you're going to see a snapback. And some of it could be the unintended consequences of focusing only on the price of pharmaceuticals, right? We can all agree that some drugs cost too much money. But if that's all we focus on, we will cause that snapback to go right back to China because we're going to focus on price. And when you look at drug shortages around the world, they're never with the expense of drugs, right? Unless it's a brand new drug and there's this giant demand like we see with Ozempic and Mounjaro and things like that. But once the demand side is understood, expensive drugs never are on shortage. It's always the really old and the really cheap generic drugs that 90% of us use every day. Very few people use the expensive ones, but we all use the low-cost generic drugs. And those are the ones, the older they are, the more beaten down the price has gotten. Those are the ones are always on shortage. So if we only focus on price, one, we're going to snap back the supply chain to the lowest cost producer, which has all kinds of consequences there. Geopolitical, quality, regulatory, safety, etc. But we're going to run into shortages because why would I want to make a product that I can barely make any money on? It's the, you know, snapback effect. So I think we're going to see, you know, potentially if we focus only on price, we're going to see this snapback.
Martin, that seems a thought-provoking note on which to end. Thank you very much for your time today.
This interview is part of a thought leadership study created by KPMG in collaboration with FT Longitude.